Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
For me, what really connected with me is the idea, like, I thought, okay, my story is, you know, around 30, I lost both my parents. And I thought my metabolism was slowing down. It's like, oh, I can't eat whatever I want anymore. I'm 30. It's actually flipped. It's that you're less adapted to the modern diet, right? So it's like as you age, you are less adapted to eat processed foods.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio. There are stories we tell ourselves about the food we eat. We make justifications, assumptions, and excuses for all of our dietary choices. But how do we stop this cycle of mindless consumption? Consumption of not only information, but of suboptimal foods. It starts with getting schooled up by Brian Sanders, producer of Food Lies. Feed your bod, feed your brain. Here it is, episode 632.
Power Athlete Nation, we are hiring. We're looking for competent individuals that can work within a team, people that have a unique skill set that involves problem solving, hard work, and working within a large tech stack that allows us to execute everything we do on a daily basis. We're not looking for coaches. If you're a coach and you're into sets and reps and want to get people faster and stronger, we got a whole other avenue for you. I want you to go to academy.powerathletehq. I want you to dial into the methodology, and I want you to get within the Block One network and absolutely crush it. But what we're looking for is someone that can come and work within the team of Power Athlete, that can work behind the scenes, that could help us run this leviathan of a company on a daily basis. Like I said, it's going to involve problem solving, project management, working within a team, working with different personalities. You have to work with me and people that have a penchant for wanting to get strong and jacked. So what I want you to do is I want you to go to powerathletehq.com. I want you to scroll to the bottom. You're going to find a link that says careers. I want you to take a look at a few of the different opportunities that we've presented to you guys. I want you to look at the requirements, and then I want you to hit and send me an email to careers@powerathletehq.com. with a resume and a cover letter and why you think that you would be an awesome addition to Power Athlete. So once again, powerathletehq.com, scroll to the bottom to the footer. I want you to find the link for careers. I want you to take a link, shoot me that email, and I want to see who you are. Now, here's the cool part. You might know somebody that fits this description, and they might be working for somebody else. If you're able to put us on to somebody or bring somebody on, I'll pay you a finder's fee. We'll figure it out at amount TBD. We'll negotiate it, but I'm willing to pay a finder's fee if you provide us amazing people. If you're looking for a job or you know somebody that's looking for a job and you can point us in the right direction, we will reward you. Once again, we are hiring. We're looking for people. Reach out. I'm excited to hear what you got. Now, after those words from our sponsor, back to the show. Power Athlete Nation, welcome to another episode of the Premier Podcast in Strength Conditioning and really lifestyle, fitness, training, fatherhood, and dope trucks and other cool things associated with just being cool.
And battling the bullshit, which we are bringing back guest Brian Sanders, host of Peak Human Podcast, the Food Lies docuseries, And most importantly, Power Athlete Radio Guest, episode 537.
And the oddest part about that episode is we had Brian on via Zoom, and then we realized that we're neighbors. Why the fuck are we doing this on Zoom?
We didn't know.
We didn't know. It's like, hey, where are you at? You're in Austin? We're in Austin. Why are we doing this on Zoom? Let's not be weird.
Did we just become best friends?
And let's come in and do it in person, which I think is always a much better experience. Thanks for coming in, Brian.
I love it. Yeah, I'm glad to be at this compound.
As you have since built your Sapien compound, I saw you cruising around, kind of getting some ideas. Is there anything that you want to take back or any questions that you might have about Power Athlete Ranch?
Oh, man. No, I love it. I'm trying to do this. I'm trying to do it in Austin. I'm trying to get people there in person. We've done a lot of stuff online, right? You know, everything's online these days. And I'm just trying to get some meat to people and get some ancestral health and events and just get people in person hanging out again, you know? Mm-hmm. Not that many people ever stop that I know.
No. Boy, that's a slippery slope.
Well, very punny opportunity. You can have meetups. M-E-A-T.
Oh, we do have meetups.
Yeah.
No, he's been sending me the flyers. I haven't got to one yet. I know you're having one July 7th. I'm actually going to be in Costa Rica.
Oh, no.
But I think Tex is going to go too. So, I mean, to your event.
Oh, man. You got to come. Yeah.
I'm in. Count me in.
So, what's on the menu?
We're doing a local soy-free, corn-free, pasture-raised pig tacos. Mm-hmm. And we have a big, giant beef leg. I just got a text. My buddy's got a big giant, he bought a beef leg like for a YouTube video, and he's like, what do I do with this? So we're gonna roast it.
Nice.
Yeah.
What's the who's gonna come in and cook, or do you have anything set up to do it?
Yeah, we have Chef Charlie. So my company's called Nose to Tail, and we do, you know, all the best regenerative meats, and we want to do a food truck, and we want to do farm to table events. So we found Chef Charlie, who's worked at some of the nicest restaurants in Austin. Nice. Amazing stuff. He does really good, like, nose-to-tail stuff. He makes, like, the pâtés and the roulettes and the, you know, smoked heart. And he pickles things. And so we're going to get him a food truck as soon as possible. But until then, he's just doing our, you know, catering and food.
Badass. Oh, yeah. That sounds exciting.
Well, I do want to lead off with the Food Lies docuseries. So when we last had you on, we spoke of the Food Lies documentary. And now this is expanded. So was it uncovering more material or things you just couldn't leave on the cutting room floor?
Yeah, the story's so big and it's getting bigger and we couldn't tell it. It was getting to be 2 hours in the film, and I don't think people can sit through 2 hours. But then if you just cut it into a series, they will sit through it, right? You put it on Netflix and they'll just binge it. So now it's about 3 hours. So it's just funny how that works.
That's so strange that people are like, oh, I couldn't see a 2.5 hour movie, but yet I could watch 4 or 5 episodes of 1 hour and binge watch something. It's so weird.
And we have to play into that, right? And so it's good though. We're making it into 6, you know, 30-minute episodes. They are kind of bingeable. They are topical, and it splits it up. We start with evolution, and we've interviewed some of the top scientists in the world that do the actual paleoanthropology, and you know, they're digging up the fossils. And we got Dr. Brianna Pobner, Dr. Bill Schindler. We have the protege of Jane Goodall, mm-hmm. this guy from Craig Stanford from USC. All these people talk. These are the people that are actually looking at like the mammoth bones, and they're like looking at cut marks and being like, humans were here, you know, the ancient humans like 1 million years ago, or like 300,000 years ago, the, you know, first Homo sapiens were here, you know, gnawing on these giant woolly mammoth bones.
Well, the narrative's kind of changed in recent time. I mean, there was this idea that I think it was, 30,000 years ago is when they claimed the first people were in North America, but they're actually finding information that's putting it at like 150 and even longer.
That was, and it was in San Diego, and it was woolly mammoth bones, I think, or mastodon or woolly mammoth, yeah.
Yeah, I was just down in Houston. We went down and take the kids down to the Houston Museum of Natural Science. I don't know if you've ever been down there. Mm-mm. But they have an incredible display of all of these different bones. I mean, it's obviously, I don't think they're the real bones. I think they're fiberglass. I mean, they would have to be too valuable. There's no way they could actually put them out. But they have like, everything from T-Rex to just this massive collection of like all these different, you know, I guess dinosaurs and all mm-hmm. the bones. But the coolest one is like, the North American short-faced bear? Mm. So there was like, and Rob Wolf actually was the one that talked to me about this, that there's some like bit of research that talked about once they basically didn't see humans in North America because of the short-faced bear was so vicious in terms of killing things. Mm. And then all of a sudden, when it started dying out, man started coming. But I don't know. I mean, that was
can
one
you describe
theory.
This?
The short-faced bear, it's pretty cool. Like, I have a picture. We can post a picture of it, but it's this massive bear that was...
I'm just trying to get a visual, like a legit flat-faced bear. No
like,
nose.
It doesn't have a big nose.
Like a pit bull.
Yeah. Like a short face in that way, but it was also like 16 feet tall, but I guess it ran as fast as the leopard.
Oh, Jesus.
So I guess the bones were lighter than normal bears, so it was extremely fast, and like the way the foot was set up.
Well, and how did it die?
For some reason, it just started dying out, and then they started. I mean, I bet you it was hunted to extinction. I mean,
well, So a lot of the megafauna died out, and we talk about this in the film, and we show there's a giant sloth. There's amazing.
They have the bones of the giant sloth. It's fucking huge.
It's so big. It's bigger than a mammoth. I was like, we have a representation of it in the film, and
you got to go down to the Houston Museum of Natural Science.
I mean, I haven't been in 30 years.
Okay, like, dude, we go at least once or twice a year to go see this, like a display of all of these bones, and you get to, I mean, they have pterodactyls, they have they have all of the different like kind of like skulls of like what they think is like, you know, so I'm kind of lost on this human evolution thing because I have a hard time grasping that we are like a common ancestor for monkeys. Like, and the one that really struck me was actually some John Sapolsky. The fact that humans are the only ones with subcutaneous fat, whereas monkeys don't have subcutaneous fat and they're much leaner than we are. So like the only...
And stronger.
Well, they are stronger, but the only mammals that have subcutaneous fat are ocean mammals.
Mm.
There's no land. We're the only land-based mammal that has subcutaneous fat. And there's no monkey... common ancestor that has subcutaneous fat. So it's kind of like, even though there are monkeys that have opposable thumbs, but yeah, so long story short.
I did two podcasts with some good PhDs that talk about the aquatic ape theory. Mm-hmm. And then, there's a whole website about it. You can Google aquatic ape and they talk about all the different reasons why they think that we came from the water. We have all these...
Dude, educate me a little bit because I've had this theory for a while that like, why is it that we are the only... Like, so as you're going through all the apes and you're trying to find like similar characteristics, it feels really interesting that like, you know, like a female ape, I think, was like 4% body fat and some of the male apes are 0 to 1% body fat. For us, the average man is what, like 8 to 14 and women are like 20 to 25.
Average?
Well depending on... not in Houston. It just seems really interesting that, and you know, and why evolutionary we would have gone that way. I mean, the ability to have fat stores so we could extend. And I mean,
I'm not an expert on it, but there's parts of our ear that are like other aquatic creatures. We have different similarities to dolphins and how they give birth. And there's the subcutaneous fat. Can you pull up a website?
Sure. Charles.
The other one, which is wild, is that, babies that are
aqua
born
apes?
What aquatic are they called? Apes.
So when a baby is born in water, the baby as soon as it comes out of the mother's womb can swim.
Yes.
That's Apocalypto.
Right. So like and then we actually if you like when the babies are born, because they had video of like, you know, childbirth happening and the baby actually swimming in water. So babies are born with the knowledge on how to swim. Whereas apes, no. They fucking don't know how to swim.
Did they test that out?
Yeah.
Put them in water and birth them?
Yeah.
Go to the aquaticape.org, the aquatic ape theory, one more down.
We can mix that with the stoned ape.
Yeah.
That was the other one I was listening to today.
Yeah. Okay. Theaquaticape.files.wordpress.com.
Yeah.
Don't use Google to search this. Charles had a dig for it.
Yeah. We'll get into this.
They're trying to bury this theory.
But it's pretty fascinating because we share all of these like unique characteristics. But, you know, it also goes back to... do you remember, this is super cool. When I was at Berkeley, Andy and Artie were found and they published it in the Daily Cal. And it wasn't until like 20 plus years later that they actually did a documentary. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing is they always thought that there was like this division, something happened and drove half of the, you know, whatever common ancestor out into the plains. And then the other ones stayed in the forest. And the ones that went out on the plains, they think stood upright to see danger. And that's how we got bipedal. And then they went to the sea. It was the consuming of like... you know, DHA and mm-hmm. other things that causes the brain to grow and the stomach to shrink. And so then they, like that. Like that was the theory. But then what was wild was when they found Andy and Artie, there was fossilized fruit bat droppings mixed in. So then they found they were effectively found them in a like rainforest, let's say. So that this was like kind of threw that to the side. It's like, well, they were bipedals. Why were they, you know, like in the forest, like they weren't looking for danger. And the one they theorized is they had to stand up to pick things or to like be able to carry young.
What, they were found in California?
No, this is in Africa.
Okay.
So.
And to throw a spear.
Yeah, and to throw a spear. And so there's like all of this really cool stuff. But the problem that I get into is when they start showing us, and this was at the Houston Museum, they show like the evolutionary chart with like the different kind of what they've said was the common ancestors, and they go through it. I just have a hard leap from like this to this. Mm. And, you know, people are like, well, what about the opposable thumbs? I'm like, what about the body fat thing? That's kind of weird. And that's the aquatic ape.
Well, infographic, the words that jumped out to me, longer penis, deeper vagina.
I don't know what that's to do with the water, but yeah.
I don't know either, but that's the first thing I read.
Diving and foraging. Yeah, there's definitely something with the ear that's like very, very interesting that no other...
We can pressurize our ears. So when we go down, we can, you know, like obviously, you know, when you go and your ears get this, we can pressurize. I don't think the others can do that. I don't think they have the ability to pressurize their ears.
There's something about even a bone in there. But still, it's not like we, you know, just didn't come from apes. I don't know. This is not what they're saying exactly. Maybe that just we were like waterside creatures that just... that always were around water and then were always in and out of the water. And yeah, like you're saying, the DHA. So Dr. Lee Broadhurst is one of them. And I forget the other doctor's name, Michael Crawford. People can look those up. They just have ideas of how, you know, just makes sense. And with the nutrition and that people who are farther inland that didn't have as much access to seafood didn't do as well. And they did some studies even more recently and they had like lower IQs or they actually had like problems because they had no like iodine or other aquatic nutrients.
Was it Tara Swarth that said we didn't evolve to eat meat? We evolved because we ate meat?
I believe so.
Yeah. So we had a real sharp.
Yeah, I think it was Tara. Yeah. I also believe her when she said that.
Yeah, no, I mean, there's many things that she said that I believe, but I just thought it was an interesting comment that she made was like, we didn't evolve to eat meat. We evolved because we ate meat. And it was fat and to go through the whole deal. But
for the record, she's a neuroscientist. So it's a deep understanding of the brain. And
not only a neuroscientist, but went back and was an MD and then went back and got her PhD in neuroscience. And then also, I mean, so
yeah,
extremely smart.
I think we bring up that line in the film. So we don't talk about the aquatic ape theory in the film.
Oh, damn.
We do talk a lot about meat. We talk about bone marrow. We talk about eating brains even. And yeah, that's very true. We didn't evolve to eat meat. We evolved because we eat meat. And that's why it's so wild that the vegans can even start to make an argument.
Yeah. Before we get into that, from evolution, where do you jump into episode two? So you said show you had four things that we're aiming to attack. Know your enemy.
Know their enemy. Oh, that's actually like part five.
Oh. Okay.
So yeah, I don't want to skip ahead too much. So the evolution stuff is big though. I mean, the big part of evolution was when 3.5 million years ago when we would just use a rock and crack open bones to get the bone marrow and to get the
They actually brain. Have proof of this. So they've found you know, they were obviously like we lived in these small communities and whatnot, and they've actually found like bones that were like not like were intentionally broken in such mm-hmm. a way with tools. And like, you know, and then they found like actual like rock scrapings on the inside of the bones to pull the marrow out. So it was very apparent that like whoever these individuals were, whether or not they were common ancestor or aliens or whoever, but somebody was cracking open bones and sucking out what was on the inside.
Were they finding these tribes same tools in both Africa and then North America?
Well, this was 3.5 million years ago. So this was just in Africa. And this is what Dr. Brianna Popner does in their concussion marks. And also Dr. Jessica Thompson, who'll be in the film now. It's concussion marks and they can see it. And then they find the stones next to it. And this is our first good access to animal nutrition, because if the bones were picked clean, there's no meat left. But we were the only animals that could get inside the bones. And that's where this fat and all this good stuff for our brain. And Yeah. So to go with your question. Yeah. So we go into all of the evolution stuff and we could spend a whole episode on it. We're talking about the stomach acidity and how, you know, the humans have, it's like a hyena or a vulture. It's like we have this highly acidic stomach. And that it also goes with the expensive tissue hypothesis, which you kind of mentioned is why our brains got big and our guts got small. Mm-hmm. And also it's expensive to have a highly acidic stomach. It doesn't happen by accident. You know what I mean? It's like, this is a huge adaptation that helped us eat meat and just, well, rotting meat. And so we go through all of these lines of evidence that just clearly show that we're meant to eat animal foods. And we kind of attack the plant-based paradigm too, because people think that we live in this modern time with Whole Foods, right? We have this modern perception that you just show up and you go to the Whole Foods and there's like 1,000 different plants and it's a full rainbow and it's magical. And it's like from a, you know,
garden. It's really the Garden of Eden.
But it's not. And then we have to go back to like, what was it really like back then?
Yeah.
No, what it was really like was a bunch of leaves that we couldn't eat and a bunch of trees and then animals, right? And then maybe we could find some of these stringy things. Like there was the wild mustard plant, which all of our modern brassicas come from, right? All the kale and Brussels sprouts and bok choy and all these things just came from this stringy little plant that gave us like 4 calories. And it's, everyone knows that we didn't go around, you know, surviving on a little wild mustard plant. So we have to kind of let the audience know that. It's like we got to shake up everything that they've learned from just the mainstream about, oh, plant-based is the best, you know, this is where we should be getting our nutrients, and we have to just like flip that. So that's the first.
It's so amazing to me that we're still having this conversation. And what's even more interesting is I feel like this narrative is losing ground because there's so much money and there's so much effort being put behind it. It does. I mean, it seems insane to me. And when I hear people actually be like, try to tell me these arguments, I'm like, wow, but you still believe this stuff? Like, you know, 2002 called and they want their fucking science back.
So I'm doing a presentation on it at a conference in 2 weeks called Exposing the $1 trillion Agenda Against Red Meat. Ooh. And it is a huge, it's so detailed. You have to go and, you know, piece together all these big companies, big food industries, big pharma, even world powers. It's like the WHO, the World Economic Forum, the UN. Like, there's so many players involved in this message. And it's an insane message when you think about it. But it's so hard to undo that message because they have, well, trillions at stake. And they've been indoctrinating the public for decades.
Do you know why?
I mean, the ultimate why?
Yeah.
I want to know your reason.
Well, I'll just give you a little hint. So years ago, I had a friend that went to Tony Robbins, you know, like one of his events. And the thing that was interesting that he made the observation from was that it was all plant-based. Like there was no meat at this.
Or caffeine or stimulants.
So no stimulants. It was all vegetables. And the interesting thing is when you are a meat eater and then you go eat a ton of vegetables, it actually makes you more docile and also more open to suggestion. So they found through their research that they could convert people faster and make people have these life changes and really help people faster if they went to a vegetarian vegan approach with just vegetables. They found that when they served the meat and more animal-based products, people were a little more like Spock eyebrow, like this sounds like bullshit. I'm not as apt to fucking buy into what you're selling.
Yeah.
So they really were able. I mean, that's why when I was at Berkeley and I took that class on cults, most of the cults were all vegan and did not allow them their members to have animal products because they were more open to suggestion and they were more docile when they fed them a vegan diet. So I think what it's really about is control.
I believe you. And I didn't want to say it, but I think that all that is very true. I do a lot of posts that kind of allude to this online, and a lot of people will come out and say it. They're like, they want a population that's easy to control. You don't want a robust, strong, high testosterone population. You don't want like guys in his room. Like that's not going to go with agenda.
No, it's, I mean, it, like, I think the individuals that we're talking about, when they're looking at trying to manage 7 billion people on a planet, it's a lot easier if everybody just does what they're told.
That's the ultimate thing. Yeah. And they just implement policies and it's about money. Well, it's money control, right? They go hand in hand. And I think it's getting really obvious now. There's this push for, you know, some sort of world government or some sort of these big things going on that they're pretty open about, you know, like the World Economic Forum. Yeah. It's just like, this is what we're doing.
Oh, and then the best is you people be like, oh, those are conspiracy theories. And you're like, no, this is what they said. Like, I don't know if you saw the other day, but Biden during his talk was like, we need funding for the next pandemic because we're going to have another one. And like everybody kind of stopped and like you could see his handlers looking around like he wasn't supposed to tell this. But I mean, like, it's crazy. Larry Johnson, my former teammate, has got a very interesting Instagram account. But we'll text back and forth. And he's like, dude, they're basically telling us, they're telegraphing this stuff now. They don't even care to try to hide it. And they know that there'll be another pandemic and this is how they can affect and control. So I mean, it's not necessarily a conspiracy theory when they're legitimately, like, you listen to the Klaus Schwab, or was it Klaus Schwab?
Yeah, Klaus Schwab.
Yeah. He's like, no, we would like a one world government, and that's what we're pushing for. And then people are like, oh, it's a conspiracy theory. I'm like, no, the guy said it.
They made a video called You'll Own Nothing and Be Happy.
Yeah.
Years ago, and they changed the title of it, but yeah, this video is everywhere. You've probably seen it. You'll own nothing and be happy. And then they do this little, and they have an article around, and it's like, oh, it's 2030, and, you know, your car shows up, and then you don't have to buy a house because it's just there, and then your food shows up, and it sounds good. You're kind of watching, and you're like, oh, this is cool. You know, it's like all on demand. Like, I don't have to pay for it. And then you're like, oh wait, but who owns everything? They're like, oh yeah. You'll own nothing to be happy. You're just a serf. You're just a peasant.
Well, you're a slave.
Slave.
Yeah. To certain people. Yeah. And well, then they decide what, you know, they decide what you own, what you do, what you say, what you think. And if you say something that's contrary to them, what do? They turn it off.
That's what I'm worried about. Meat, and people have asked me, yeah, where is this all going, or why are you fighting against this? It's like, you guys got to calm down. I'm like, no, because you can see where it's going. They have in the UK, they even have these chips you can put in your hand and you can pay for at the grocery. It's like, oh, and everything sounds good. It's like, oh yeah, you just show up and you don't have to bring your wallet and you just pay. They're like, okay, then what happens when they already have sugar tax, which I actually don't agree with, because I don't want people, you know, regulating. I don't want the government regulating what I eat, because soon meat's going to be a junk food. They already are trying to say it's a junk food. Sure. So now there's going to be the meat tax. Or then it's going to be, okay, you go to the grocery store, you have your little chip. You've already had your quota of meat because it has saturated fat. Well, you've had your quota for the week.
Well, here's a big problem personally that I have. My son's a type 1 diabetic. So he eats, you know, very low carb Bernstein diet, which is like a high protein, low fat, low carb diet. We manage his carb. So, I mean, he pretty much eats a, you know, protein-based meat diet. So, I mean, they start cutting back on meat, and then I'm like, you know, I'm not going to put him on a westernized diet and have – it's just – it's a huge problem. So, I mean, just from, like, our standpoint, I'm like, at that point, we're just going to start killing everything in our backyard.
Yeah.
And it includes the people that come for us. But
hey, yeah.
No, but, I mean, it's a real problem. But I think a big thing, too, which they've done a great job of, is they, you know, the powers that be have effectively desensitized us and disconnected us from where the meat is coming from, and more importantly, where our food comes from. Mm-hmm. You know, we think, like we said, we go to the Garden of Eden, a.k.a. Whole Foods, and we give them their little chip, and they give us food, and then we go on our day not realizing where this stuff comes from. And I think your big push in terms of nose to tail is trying to reconnect people with, like, this is our food source and this is where it comes from, and you have to be an educated consumer.
Yeah, and I'm going hunting this weekend.
Nice.
To be a part of that, yeah.
Where are you going?
I'm going 3 hours west. So, okay. Yeah, maybe 2.5 hours west now that I'm a little more west.
Are you you going out to a ranch, or where are you headed?
Yeah. Probably there's axis deer, there's hogs, and there's some kind of antelope.
Nice.
Yeah, so I got to choose which one I'm going for.
But. Go for the Axis.
Yeah.
Some of the best steaks I've ever had are Axis. I'm trying to line up a hunt. My buddy's got a property down in Campwood, and he's got Axis, and we've been trying to go down there to try to get some. But yeah, I've had Axis steaks, and they're awesome.
And they're great in Maui. And I'm from Hawaii, and they have a lot of Axis deer. And yeah, that's a good place to go out and get some.
Yeah, they're actually – well, I mean, they're from Africa, and they're big. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, to the point where, I mean, dude, they look like cows. So, I mean, they're huge.
I heard in New Zealand, they introduced them and then they overran because they have no natural predators. So now the axis deer in New Zealand's at the point where they're just killing and leaving them. Wow. Mm.
Well, that's in Hawaii. They're an invasive species, and they're not killing and leaving them. But yeah, there's a great company that's figured out how to do it at night. And they do, I think they have like the night vision, and they have this whole system where they can harvest and then get it out to a facility and sell it.
Nice. That's cool. They're invasive species here in Texas. Mm-hmm. So are audads, which are like these big sheep. But I saw not on my cam, but my buddy who lives up on 12, a little bit farther from here, he's had actually Axis on his cams. Mm. So, I mean, they're coming more this way. I can't imagine the day I look out and see an Axis fucking shoot
party. Get your gun already.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they're like pigs. I hate the pigs, so. I mean, I've shot one and cleaned it, and I'll never clean another pig. Mm. I hate them. I just leave them out. They're just fucking trash.
Well, you don't just leave them out. You make it a family affair, get the kids out there, and they watch you rip it to shreds.
No, well, they're so destructive. I'm so pissed at them. So what they'll do is they come and they dig up our pastures, and I got to go fix all the pastures because the horses end up hurting themselves in the holes. So I'm pretty fucking mad at those pigs.
Well, you know, it's good to, the original point was to know where your food comes from, right? And go get out there and hunt. And I think part of the agenda is closing people off from that completely and making them forget where meat comes from. And I think that's the only reason this whole vegan agenda exists. I've looked into like the whys behind the vegan, right? And I think it can only happen if you are so disconnected from nature. And so the only places where there's heavy vegan populations are in the cities. And they're in the really westernized, like wealthy areas. I used to live in Venice Beach, California, and it was a nightmare. It was just, you know, Santa Monica, like everyone there was just like, oh, I'm vegan. Like every girl I went out with, like, I'm vegan. I don't eat meat. I'm like, well, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go to Texas. Because like I went on dates for like 2 years and not one girl ate red meat. They're like, oh, I do a little bit of chicken sometimes. Ugh. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, but then all of a sudden they get drunk and they're waiting in line to get a fucking pink sauce.
Oh, they're getting a burger. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, like when they sober and then all of a sudden they want to go to Fatburger, In-N-Out, wait in line at Pink's for fucking 2 hours for hot dogs. So, yeah, they're vegan. Then they have to get fucking sober up. You know?
But, yeah, that's where the vegans are. They're like the wealthy people that live in cities that have no idea where the meat comes from. Right? Like that's why it can exist. I use this in a presentation, too. I don't know who, like, brought this up originally, but for all of history, humans would have been seen multiple animals butchered before they could talk. Like, if not hundreds of animals butchered in front of them before they could even talk. It's just part of life. Oh, here's our chicken. You know, this is our food for the night. And now, no one's seen it. Like, if you look at the average person, no one's seen an animal die for food or gutted or butchered.
Oh, I mean, my kids have.
Yeah, yeah. I have. 0.01%. Yeah, people out here.
I got a great picture when I killed this pig that's right over there. I dragged the kids out of bed and I made them go take pictures with it because it was so big that I was like, man, I need something for
scale.
For scale. Mm. And so I have these pictures and like my daughters are there and my son's way far back and he wants no part of this thing. And then they proceeded me to watch me hack off its head with a machete.
They're not going to be vegan.
No, not at all. Well, my kids are pretty sharp and they realize that big muscles come from eating meat. Mm. And like, there's also like an idea of like, you know, strength and muscle is like a predominant factor of why we're different than the rest of the population. Mm-hmm. So my daughters are big into that.
That's great. Yeah. I've never seen vegans. Well, there's a few. They trot them out on the Game Changers, the guys that eat the pea protein shakes every hour.
Yeah, but they're also consuming like 800 to 1,000 grams of protein. So, which, yeah. I mean, theoretically, you can gain muscle as a vegan if you consume a ton of protein. The problem is that the nutrient density of the protein is so low that the consumption amount is next to fucking impossible. Like you said, those guys are having like, you know, 90 to 100 grams of protein every hour, you know, every waking, which just feels like fucking intestinal.
Yeah,
pain and fucking distress.
I mean, not all proteins are created equal.
Yeah.
So this is some of the bullshit that we go to battle with. But Brian, you're deep into it. Mm. So I mean, that sounds like a hell of a lot of work.
Yeah.
Like, why do they choose to believe it? Is it
so they can be on Game Changers show? Yeah. I mean, like honestly, I like it's the same reason that at bodybuilding shows, the dudes that show up and compete in the natural are taking drugs too. They just didn't get caught for it. So. Do I think they're full of shit? Yes. Do I think that these guys are consuming that amount of protein? Maybe some of them. I just don't think it's viable.
Well, it's scientifically, yes, not as good quality. The big story is plants, they're meant as survival foods, right? It's like for all of history, meat was, and animal foods were our goal. And this is how everyone knew we stayed healthy and every population. I mean, I just went to Africa last year to visit these people, and it's like all they're after is meat. Yeah, the Hadza, the Maasai. The Maasai are famous for eating only, the men at least, only eating blood, meat, and milk.
And then what's wild is when they retire them as hunters, so when they no longer can hunt, they kind of like push them off, and they only live like 2 or 3 years because they take them off of their diet. And they go on to like whatever their like non-hunting diet is, which is like a mix of
slop. Yes. These days, so what they have, it's called ugali. So they have to survive on cornmeal and water. And if you're lucky, you get cornmeal with some milk in it.
Yeah. And they put
once you stop hunting?
Yeah, once you're no longer considered a hunter. But also you were saying that some of the Maasai don't have cows. So I guess maybe some of the poorer Maasai.
There's all different kinds of Maasai. There's not many people, many of them that live their traditional ways anymore. So we saw all of the levels. We were in the city. It's in Arusha, I believe, is in Tanzania. And you could see the modern Maasai. They're just obese and diabetic. And they're just eating normal processed foods from the market. And they're just a mess. And then as you go further out into the country, you can see their health get better and better as they live more and more naturally.
So the farther we get away from our ancestral diet, the worse our health is.
You just did the whole film in one sentence. Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole thing. But we have to tell it like 100 different ways in 6 different episodes. So we break it down, right? So yeah, we have to start with the evolution side. Then talking about the protein side, that's more in episodes in the middle, like 2 or 3, where we talk about the difference between animal protein and plant protein. And that, yes, I was starting to say plants are the survival foods. They don't have the full amino acids. They don't have the full bioavailability of the protein. Even if it did have, say, whatever protein it's claimed on it, your body's not going to get all that protein. So it's like, it's a good system. It makes sense where throughout history, we couldn't always get an animal every single day, right? So it's like, okay, we humans are very adaptable. We can survive on many things. So we can like kind of piece together the plant proteins and survive, right? And so now, just to jump ahead, it's just the crazy part is people are using that basically hack that we could survive on plant foods for a while as a diet or like as a way to get nutrition. And that's why you see the people who do vegan for a long time, they either get fat if they're eating just processed trash, or if they're eating just whole foods plant-based, they get emaciated and sarcopenic.
Well, isn't it also like the greatest form of like white privilege and just wealth privilege? The fact that I can survive on a diet that is completely juxtaposed to my entire evolution. And what's hilarious, and I would get into this, and I've battled the vegans many a times on social media, but it's by far the greatest form of like, it's the greatest flex on the planet. Like, you guys talk about white privilege, you talk about wealth and privilege and this and equality, but it's the greatest form of it because you guys are basically surviving on a diet that is juxtaposed to everything you want in evolution. You're effectively showing your massive flex to do exactly what your body doesn't want you to, and finding a way to use money to hack into it. Because it's, you know, it's fucking blows my mind.
And yeah, it's expensive to get all the supplements. And I still don't think you can supplement your way into a vegan diet or out of a vegan diet, whatever you want to phrase it. I think people try to, and you can get some B12 from different sources, and you can try to get some analogs. Like, there's precursors to EHA and DPA. Like, these are the real ones you need. There's precursors in, you know, they're like, oh, walnuts or flax seeds. There's, you know, these omega-3s, like, those are not real omega-3s. Those are precursors, and your body can't convert them all. So people try to use supplementation for those, for iron, for vitamin B, all the B vitamins, the B12s, the other Bs, the zinc. There's so many things that you're not going to get. People try. I still don't think there's any proof that you can actually get the real deal from supplementing. And it would be super expensive. And it's just... yeah, it's completely unnatural.
So, okay. So you battle through it with the evolutionary piece. You get into the health piece. What's the next part?
So we have some other, we show the case for healthy eating. We need to wake people up. We give them like the dire situation we're in. And we also have to make our thesis is that food is the number one factor in health. A lot of people think, oh, it's just genetic, or, oh, I just need to jog more and I'll be healthy. Or like, oh, it's just, you know, the environmental toxins, which are a huge piece that we talked about before the show. Environmental stuff is bad. But there's also people in Tonga and Fiji and Micronesia and all over the place that have pristine air, pristine water. They work outside and they're obese and diabetic. What changed? The food, right? They can be doing all the other things right. They are exercising. There's documentaries on it. We're going to show some clips in the film. I've tried to visit some of these places. These people are doing everything right. Exercise, sun, you know, clean water, clean it. Just they're a mess. And food matters the most. I don't even know if that's controversial. I mean, it seems like you guys kind of know that instinctively, that food matters most, but the rest of the public, they're just like, oh, well, my doctor said it's genetic. Or
I think I came into this thing in a different way, in that my singular goal since I was 14 years old was to put on muscle and size to basically play for football. Mm-hmm. So I started lifting weights to be bigger and stronger. You know, the old power lifter that trained me talked about, you know, you got to eat big and strong if you want to be big and strong. You know, this is how people, you know, and he was an old Greek dude. So everything was like, you know, meat based and mm-hmm. there was rice and it was just kind of like traditional diet. He talked about, you know, Vince Guaranda and the Stone Age diet and, mm-hmm. you know, what he did. So when I'm 45 now, so since I was 14 years old, so for over 30 years of my life, like this was the singular goal. And then all of a sudden, as I got bigger and stronger and I saw the way I ate, you know, I mean, it was like a one-to-one. Like when I ate more and I ate like this, I got bigger and stronger. And then, you know, when I met Mauro De Pasquale, and, you know, Mauro was kind of the father of carb cycling. I mean, he still followed a paleo diet, and this is what the carbs look like, and this is, you know, what the food quality. And there was a direct relationship between the amount at which I ate, the food quality, and then physically how I performed, and more importantly, my body composition. So, like, it was wild. Like, the more food I ate, the leaner I was, and the bigger and the stronger mm-hmm. I was. And so it was kind of a one-to-one where I saw it in terms of performance and size and body composition, because that was what I was getting paid to do. Mm-hmm. So it just made a ton of sense to me. And so what's wild for me is I think a lot of, or most of the world doesn't have to go make a living based upon their physical performance on that given day. Mm-hmm. Right? You sit behind a computer or this, or maybe if you're a laborer, but you know, I mean, mm-hmm. you know, what do you move one more rock than you did the day before? Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to be able to say, well, you didn't move a rock, you got to go. Mm-hmm. Whereas playing the NFL, it's directly related. So, I mean, it was a one-to-one. And it just was very, very simple that when we ate this way, the body composition was different. I was leaner, I was stronger, I was better, I was healthier, my body didn't ache. And so it was, you know, it just made a ton of sense. And I think the reason that people are so disconnected is they don't have a physical job within nature, or their survival doesn't depend upon it.
It is, and they look like it. It doesn't look good. I traveled around recently, and you go through an airport, and it's bad news out there. And if people don't have to do anything, their big, like, physical thing of the day is going to get their Uber Eats, then they won't know, and they don't know how bad they feel too. Like, you can see that the body composition is a nightmare, and I like to get into this guy, Dr. Sean Amara. He does MRIs and looks at the visceral fat. It's kind of like a extreme DEXA scan, right? It's like the next level of DEXA.
Sure.
We can really see what's going on. And people have, their legs are just pure fat. Like they can, he'll look at it. He did like a 72-year-old woman who was just sedentary, and her, it was just pure fat. And then there was a little muscle in the middle, and then that was still marbled in fat. Mm. And then there was another lady who just, you know, was active, and her muscle just looks like a regular muscle. It was just solid and thick, and there was nothing there. So people just don't even know what's going on in their body.
Well, it's because I think through, you know, I mean, obviously like the advent of like health and, you know, modern medicine and whatnot, like people can effectively cheat, you know, like whereas maybe a couple hundred years ago, this wouldn't have been the case. You know, you mm-hmm. just wouldn't have survived. You wouldn't have lasted. And I think we've, you know, through obviously our lifestyle, all the modern convenience and everything that we've put together, it's just not as important. You know, we've gotten into this almost like the movie Surrogates, where it's like, at some point, I'm not even going to have to leave my house. Somebody else will leave the house, and I can just control them from my own house. I mean, it's true with like the food stuff. Like, I still trip out like Matt Vincent being like, yeah, I order all my food online. I never go to the market. Why would you waste that time? Because I enjoy going to the supermarket. I like mm-hmm. to go see the stuff, or I like, you know, we go to farmer's markets where you go things to try to collect, like to get food, because I think that's an interesting, it's just an interesting practice for my kids to see it and be connected to it. It's just, if like you just go online and there's a computer and you put it in and it magically shows up at your door. I just think it's such a disconnection. And I would say for, you know, somebody like Matt, who's so busy, it might make sense. But for me as a father, I just don't want to see, like, that's not what I want to paint the picture for my kids.
Yeah. Well, we got on the food matters most. That's what we're talking about here. And I think, you know, you bring up the bodybuilders or the people just trying to put on muscle. And I think sometimes they miss some of this, right? Like, I don't know if you've experienced this where all they care about is protein and macros, but like, don't go beyond that. Do you have like strong opinions on that?
I think, one, I hate talking about macros. It's like, even though it's anything anybody ever wants to talk about, but I think muscle is extremely expensive. Mm-hmm. And it's not easily cultivated. Like, my favorite is when we meet women, they're like, oh my God, I look at a barbell and I put on muscle. I'm like, holy shit, I've been chasing this for 30 years. So how did you figure it out? Mm-hmm. But I think muscle is extremely expensive. It's mm-hmm. it's hard to put on. It takes you know, some effort, some periodization, and some understanding. I also know that there's a direct relationship between muscle mass to body fat that increases, you know, metabolic flexibility. You know, recently on a podcast, I got so tired of every time I turn on, all they're ever talking about is fat loss. Mm-hmm. You know, fat loss. I mean, every post Lee Norton has is on fat loss. Mm-hmm. Everybody's obsessed with this idea of like losing fat. And it just became clear that, you know, the majority of people that we see when they start posting before and after, it's like, oh my God, look at this person's fat loss journey. They just looked worse. I mean, well, they had less fat, but they just didn't carry a ton of muscle. And when we start working with people, I realize, you know, percentage of body fat is just a percentage. If you gain 10 pounds of muscle, all of a sudden, if you didn't do anything to change your body fat, it obviously gets cut and you look dramatically better. So a lot of times people are so focused on losing weight and losing body fat when they probably do better just trying to put on some muscle. Muscle is extremely insulin sensitive, fat's extremely oxidative. So just the fact that you put on more muscle increases thermogenics, everything just kind of increases. Mm-hmm. And I think just as a society, people just are very low muscle. And, we're kind of equating it to fat. But at the end of the day, like, people are just weaker because they're not forced to be able to do stuff. I mean, the fact that we have to create artificial ways to put on muscle and be strong is fucking blows my mind.
But we do it better than anyone else. PowerAthleteHQ.com/Jack Street.
Which we do. But the thing that I love about every one of the people that follows our training, and I can't say it's 100%, but it's 99%. And I know this because people tag me at John Wellborn and all of their training stuff. What I love is when they show me things that they're doing outside of the gym. Like, hey, I follow the training. Here's me doing something outside. And to me, that's by far the most dope stuff. Because they're using their fitness and their training and their strength and everything that they're gleaning from the programs in a meaningful way to go out and fucking take on the world and kick ass. Whether it's, you know, a dude hunting or, somebody trekking somewhere or doing something wild. Like, I want to see the physical, you know, application. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's real great just to train in the gym and look great. But, like, how are you using it in interesting ways? That's the stuff that gets me excited.
I love it. Yeah. There's two. Yeah, everyone is under muscle. Even I'm under muscle. I need to get back in the gym.
What's up, dude? We got to get you fucking jacked.
No, yeah, I hurt my finger. I'm like kind of like out of the loop here.
Were you flicking people off and some old lady snapped it?
Beach volleyball, man. Beach volleyball, yeah.
Weren't you kind of heavy for a while?
Back in my 20s. Yeah, that's where my journey started. I was just round, kind of. And it's the body composition stuff. I do kind of hate that stuff where everyone's talking about macros or just like fat loss. But that... I mean, that is kind of what's needed for some people. Well, there's two sides of the coin, right? There's the fat loss and there's the muscle gain. And yet a lot of people just try to do the fat loss. A lot of people don't even do it correctly where they lose weight and they're losing muscle as well. Mm-hmm. That's a whole nother story that we get into the film. We need to tease this stuff out because we can't just say, oh yeah, the scale's going down. That's good. I think most people, I'm so against the calorie counting paradigm and they're just like eat less, move more, or just cut calories, macros, stuff like that. Because if you're just eating less calories, you're just eating less protein and nutrients too. Unless you're very specific about it. I know you
would. Yeah, we're always about a high protein diet and caloric restriction, but there's an easy way to get into caloric restriction. It's called do some fucking work.
And get the high protein. Yeah. Well, you gotta keep that protein. So most people don't focus on the protein part. They're just Weight Watchers. There's nothing about protein.
If you look at every single bodybuilder, and we'll just use bodybuilding because we talked about it earlier, but in terms of like big, strong, or let's say big aesthetically pleasing individuals that carry a lot of muscle in relation to body fat, bodybuilders kind of figured it out. Every single bodybuilding diet, regardless of how you skin the macros, mm-hmm. is high protein and caloric restriction.
Yep.
And how they get into caloric restriction is either they eat less food, but a lot of times they just do more work. So I would rather have people do more work than actually pull food. But at some point, you got to pull food. Mm-hmm. When you see these guys at the peak, I mean, they're on super low carb. I mean, low calorie, high protein, and they're doing a ton of exercise. I mean, that's how every bodybuilder's getting shredded since the beginning of the world.
But that's just simple science of your body wants protein nutrients. This is kind of more stuff we're doing in the film. Breaking this down to people, because not everyone is a bodybuilder. Not everyone understands all this stuff or even knows what food is. People are just like, oh, I do paleo. I do vegan. Like, they don't even know. It's just like a name, right? They don't even understand what they're doing. So we're breaking.
Why is it that all of the food that are on the paleo diet are so like, this is a huge problem I had. You brought it up. Mm-hmm. I fucking hate that the weirdos got attached to the paleo diet, that it was these dudes in loincloths or like the Liver King and all these people mm-hmm. where they just turned into cartoon characters around the paleo, because I actually love all the foods on the paleo diet. And I would say that majority of the foods we eat, let's say 80% that we eat at my house, fit within the paleo diet. And it just... I mean, it's
been hijacked, kind of.
It fucking got hijacked by the fucking kooks and the weirdos. And that was always the most upsetting thing to me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at its core, it's just these are human foods, right? That's why you naturally are drawn to them and eat them. And that's, I mean, it's unfortunate that people, everything's a gimmick these days about making sales and money, right? So I guess people do hijack everything, even good things. But.
No gimmicks at powerathletehq.com/nutrition.
The worst thing that happened to paleo was the fucking paleo tards and the weirdos and just the fucking the kooks that showed up. And it like jumped the shark. And I remember like feeling so bad and like even talking to Rob Wolf about this. And he's like, yeah, I didn't think these weirdos would show up.
Brian, did Paleo FX draw you to Austin?
No, but there was a lot of, there's just a lot of great people in Austin that eat meat and are woken up. They're not woke, they are awake.
Do you think what did Matthew McConaughey call Austin? The blueberry and the bowl of chili, I think, is what Matthew McConaughey referred to as Austin. But Austin still, I mean, it's funny, you meet people from Texas and they're like, these damn Californians coming here. I'm like, no, the real staunch Californians never moved. But
there,
like,
there's some people that I wish didn't move here. I'm from Hawaii though. I'm not from California. But yeah, now there are.
But you lived in California.
I lived in California. But yes, I came here for some meat and freedom. I didn't come here for, you know, bring some LA politics over here.
Yeah.
But there are some, I'm telling you. You walk around Austin, you're out here, you know, you're out west. I'm in the middle of things.
You're in the belly of the beast.
Oh, man. I'm on Fifth Street, too. I'm like kind of near downtown. I walk around. People are like, God, they're N95 zone. They're kind of like wandering around, like trying to figure out where they are. Yeah, it's not good.
I think unfortunately, I was reflecting on this recently. So my dad hated the television. He used to call it the idiot box. Mm-hmm. And he was firmly convinced that television would be the downfall of humanity, mm-hmm. that it made people lazy. It was like, just like the force feeding. Like, you've obviously seen those like, old cartoons where like the, you know, the zombies are just watching the TVs and it's going by. And so my dad was convinced that the idiot box would be the end of society. Mm. And I mean, it was true. I mean, we talk about the dumbing down of society from basically just TV shows and mundane. Like, I don't even think he could fathom what the internet has effectively done, because what it's made us is just consumers of content and information that are being put together and pushed out in a way. And it's like, you know, ideally you want people to be able to have their own ideas and be able to find like-minded people. But the barrage of information, I mean, like, I see it in my kids, and like, I feel like have to have like a conversation with them almost daily. Whereas, you know, we didn't grow up with this, you know, I mean, I didn't have a cell phone until I went to the NFL. Like, we weren't, you know, maybe 30 minutes to an hour of TV, but that was because there was nothing ever on. Mm-hmm. I remember that, like, we turn on and it'd be like MASH, the news, or like Judge Judy or Judge Wapner or something. And I remember we turn it on and it sucks when we go outside. Whereas now they have Netflix, there's thousands of channels, there's DVR. I mean, there's something on all the time that you can watch endlessly. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if as a kid, if I could have even handled that. And so trying to give them perspective. But what scares me is like, we know, like, at least physically, or I know, and I'm sure there's people listening to podcasts that do remember a different time. What I'm worried about is when all of a sudden this generation goes and this is all they know, mm-hmm. where all of a sudden, what do you mean? TikTok dances are normal. Mm-hmm. you know, you're over there like pointing at your, like all the words like on TikTok, but like that will become the cultural norm. That will be, you know, my dad talking about like, I remember we didn't have a TV. We used to listen to the radio. Mm-hmm. Like there's like a different, like we didn't have a refrigerator. We had an ice box. Mm-hmm. There was a deal where a dude would show up and you put ice into your, like there was a door on the outside of your house. They would put ice in and then your food, like he explained it to me. We saw one once and I was like, holy shit. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I never knew it was like to have an ice box, but it was cool that he showed me. So, I mean, I think over time you lose perspective. And what I'm nervous about, and we were talking about to take it back to meat. Like you said, like there were, you know, there was probably a point where these kids were, you know, saw, you know, thousands of animals processed before they could talk. Well, now we're in a time where like, that's not the norm anymore. And people have to go out and do it. Like how long does it take to scrub? And what's it going to take to be able to awaken people and realize that this isn't how society has gone? And actually, we're in a process of de-evolution, not evolution.
Well, I think we're splitting into two societies. I think there are people like us, and we're going down this path, and everyone listening is probably on this path. But and I thought it was like a large amount of people. And then you look around, and you're like, oh, wait, we're only like 1%. And then the rest of the world's going to go down the Wall-E path. I never saw the movie, but I've seen clips. You've seen those clips with the people in the carts, like with the food and like their bellies hanging over. Mm-hmm. I think that's like the end stage of what you're talking about. It's like this progression from the icebox, you know, to the fridge, to
Uber TV, Eats, where I don't even need to have a fucking refrigerator anymore because they just deliver food to my house.
Yeah, and we're seeing this play out in front of us. And I said I just traveled. It is Wall-E out there, right? You've been to some airports lately?
Yeah.
It's Wall-E world.
Yeah, but is it globally? Or I mean, because you've traveled the world. You've traveled to Africa. You've been other places. Is this universal for the places that you've been? I mean, it's wild. I mean, we're traveling to Costa Rica in a couple of weeks, which is cool because we really haven't gone anywhere since, you know, pre-COVID, right? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of neat that we're getting a chance to go somewhere. But I remember I was in... Man, I think we were in Amsterdam, and we were at sitting at a pub drinking outside, and we started playing a game with some people. I think they were, God, I don't know if they were from Holland or if they were like where they were from, but they were either from like Holland or like one of the Denmark or something. So we were sitting there drinking beers with them, and we were playing a drinking game on like guess the nationality of people that were walking by. And it was like if they had white socks, they were American. If they were fat, they were either American or German. Like if they had a scarf, they were like Italian. Mm-hmm. And so we were just trying to pick people up and like, man, and then somebody had to go over and talk to them and figure out. And it was a fun drinking game. But it was very apparent when they'd see like a fat person, they'd be like American. I'd be like, no, fucking go over and make sure enough they were American or German. Mm. And it was got to the point where I was like, fuck, like this isn't helping our cause here.
Yeah, well, yeah, Americans are leading the way. British are not looking good. In the past 10 years, I've been to Australia. I've been to Southeast Asia. I've been to South America. I've been to Europe. I've been all over. I think America definitely is the worst. What's interesting about Africa is I went to Uganda as well. After we did the tribes, we went because there's the pygmies, the Batwa are in Uganda. We had to go all the way out to the it's almost to the Congo area, where the mountain gorillas are. And anyway, the people...
Oh, like the gorillas in the mist, the Jane Goodall stuff?
Yeah. And so we went out and we did that. It was great. It was during COVID and it was like half price. And we're like, oh, let's do it. And
sweet.
We like went and you like trek and you have to find them. Well, we didn't find them, but they actually have people out there tracking the gorillas. And then you don't know where they are and you have to go find them. And they like have radios and like, here they are. And we saw like the band of gorillas with the silverback and we got right up next to them. It was crazy.
Sweet.
But in Uganda, and Tanzania, generally people, like other than in the real heart of the cities where people were just eating a bunch of processed foods, they looked normal. Like they were fit. And this was right during COVID. They didn't do COVID. They just,
you mean no mass, no social distancing?
No one knew what it was. Like no one knew what a mask was. If you wore a mask in Tanzania, they'd be like, what is wrong with this person? Like they probably like stay away from you because they're like, this guy's sick. Which is probably the right reaction.
Sure.
No, they were stuffed in vans. They had 20 people in a 8-person van. Just no one heard of COVID. They were all in pretty good shape as well.
So how big are the pygmies? Are they as small as like as I'm imagining when I say the word pygmy?
They weren't that small because they interbreed into the just normal population. So that they're just, you know, they're like 4'11" or something, 5'2".
Wasn't there an original thought that the pygmies were not Homo sapiens?
I don't know. I don't know that. I don't know that one.
The other one I'm fascinated by is they've shown all these different like versions of humanity, like the Neanderthals and that deal. And then they just all disappeared and there was just one Homo sapiens. So there was almost like this war of like different humanoids.
I mean, yeah. I mean, Neanderthals died out somehow.
Well, they found there was an island where they found like another offspring of like humanity.
That Homo Floresiensis.
Yeah, the little people.
Floresiensis.
Yeah. Like the hobbits.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's some like the evolutionary stuff is pretty epic.
Yeah, I don't know how to spell it. Floresiensis.
Yeah. But it sounds like, at least in your travels, the farther away you get from the city and like processed foods back into this, like we've said, like within your ancestral diet, you know, you're obviously, did you interview Michael Rose?
I did.
So we, yeah, you know, so, oh nice. Yeah, dude, so Michael Rose was on Rob Wolf's podcast is when I first, he popped on my radar, and a few of the people that I consider to be the smartest people I know, like Matt Lalonde and Rob and these guys, when they refer to somebody as like, that's the smartest dude in the room, Chris Masterjohn, same deal. You got to pay attention. And Michael Rose gave that incredible talk on at the Ancestral Health Symposium on bees. It wasn't on bees. It was fruit flies.
Yeah.
And, you know, incredible talk, but he talked about, you know, at a certain point, they have to take the fruit flies back to their ancestral diet to allow them to have a healthy life. And, you know, up until the age of about 4 days, they can feed them whatever they want, and then they end up dying off really quick, or they can kind of, you know, extend. And his thing was like, this is a great metaphor because we can track it this way. And the one thing that was most impactful for me about Michael Rose wasn't the fact, like, he gave an incredible talk, but as he was giving his CV, and all of a sudden he's like, in 1959, and you're like, how old is this dude?
That's what I was going to say.
Oh my God. And so I went back and read all of his books on like aging and perception in this. And like his whole deal is like, you know, our brain ages us based upon our vision and our eyes. And, you know, that's why women age slower than men. And he went through a whole bunch of stuff, but I mean, just super fascinating. But like that guy, in terms of like his information, in terms of aging and returning to the ancestral diet, was by far one of the most impactful talks I've ever heard.
He's amazing. He's in the film. You're just listing the people in the film. Chris Masterjohn, you know, like Rob Wolf, like we're getting.
Well, yeah, dude, these are all of our friends. These are all our contemporaries. I mean, these are, you know, friends of mine, like, you know, Matt Lalonde and Rob. I mean, I spoke at an Ancestral Health Symposium in 2011. You know, I was at the first one. And, you know, this evolutionary science deal, I mean, this has been part of our life for the last 10 years. So it's great that you're bringing these people on. But what's wild is it's not a very big community. And as my buddy Rick always says, when you push out to the fringe, it's one person.
And Lalonde, we tried to even get Lalonde in. He didn't respond because he did a great nutrient density presentation. And he just didn't respond. I don't know. Maybe
he doesn't like people.
Yeah.
and oddly enough, I think it's Rob and I are the only people he likes.
Yeah.
Because I meet people constantly. They're like, hey, we've been trying to get a hold of Matt Lalonde. I'm like, oh, really? And I'll call him. He'll pick right up. And I was like, what's going on? I'm like, man, all these people are trying to get a hold of you. He's like, yeah, no, I'll never pick up.
Wow. Well,
he's done Power Athlete Radio.
He has. And it's funny because two people, one is Mauro and the other one's Lalonde. I'll still get emails of people being like, hey, we'd like to get them on. We can't get them on. I'm like, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, yeah, we did back him into a corner. What's the best Halloween candy? And he's like, nothing. We're like, no. We don't take no for an answer. So peanut M&Ms, people. Let Matt Lalonde stamp of approval.
That must mean it's true then.
Well, what's funny is the carnivore people were chasing Matt Lalonde around to try to get him to sign off on the carnivore stuff. And like, you know, like, and Matt's whole deal has always been like, you know, the healthiest people are the people that can eat the most diverse diet, you know, and Roy G. Biv and, you know, obviously high protein diet, but like, you know, to be able to consume, you know, like obviously plants and this, and we're omnivores. And so like his always deal has been like the greatest form of health is the people that can consume the greatest amount of foods, which is also Dr. Tom's take. And, if you effectively can only consume one food, like just carnivore, like eat meat, that's the only thing I can hold down. Like, is that a great indicator of like your ability to, you know, metabolic flexibility and health and whatever, if you can't eat diverse foods?
they're very fragile. Yeah, I want to be anti-fragile. Yeah, I'm against carnivore, sole carnivore diets. It sounds crazy.
Well, I mean, even Paul Saladino kind of pivoted. And, you know, he was this, and now all of a sudden he's talking about, you know, carbs and fruit and, you know, honey and other things. So he kind of has pivoted more to, I mean, you know, which, you know, is what kind of Matt always said, like eat a high protein diet and, you know, find foods that are, you know, carbohydrates and like we need carbs. The idea of the carbophobe, you know, has kind of died out. But, you know, I mean, it's, I just get nervous when people get so restrictive. Like you have the vegans on one side where it's like you only eat this and you get the carnivore people on the other side. And I'm like, yo, man, like
you guys are the same.
Yeah. You guys are like the same people. It's a circle. You'll eventually get back to the same fucking.
This is where we started. People don't know what food is.
Yeah. Well, that's a whole nother story. Yeah. We can get into that. First, I want to wrap up Michael Rose because that guy's amazing.
One of the smartest dudes I've ever heard.
So he's going to be in the film. We haven't filmed with him yet. We're saving him to get all of our last juicy bits. And that presentation, I swear, someone asked me all my money. How old is he? I'd say 45. He's 65.
65.
65 in that presentation.
Dude, I had to go look it up because he references when he got his PhD in 1959.
Yeah.
And my fucking head exploded. I stopped it and I had to Google how old he was. And he was in his mid-60s. He looks incredible. I mean, he's super fit, looks young, intelligent, went well with all. It was like when we met Art Devaney.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever met Art Devaney. He looks like Superman's granddad.
Mm.
He's like super fit, lucid, in great shape. Rob gave a, told me a story once. He went, I think they were in New York and went to dinner with Art Devaney. And like Art like jumped off the curb and like sprinted across the street to like catch a taxi. And he's like, fuck, dude, if he had a cape, he would have flown away. He was like, he's so athletic and he moves so well. And, you know, his evolutionary fitness, it was super impactful for me back in the day. Still is. I mean, but just if for all of the lip service and whatnot, like you can see a dude like Michael Rose or Art Devaney, I'm going to probably gravitate towards what those guys are doing more so than what other people are doing.
Or the Michael Greger, the vegan doctor that looks like he's like going to die any second.
Yeah.
He's like got a fat stomach and he's just full of visceral fat. Like, or the other, some of these vegan doctors are losing their minds. Like, forget the guy's name, John something. He's just eating a low-fat diet for the past 20 years and his brain's gone. He's like, it's literally gone. Like, he's like, there's like videos of him just like all over the place, like talking nonsense. It's wild. Like,
well, can you imagine being so bought in on an ideology that even in the face of like your own mortality and death, you still can't pivot out of it?
You're stuck. Yeah, you can't see outside of it. But okay, so Michael, one more thing with Michael Rose. For me, what really connected with me is the idea, like, I thought, okay, my story is, you know, around 30, I lost both my parents, and I thought my metabolism was slowing down. It's like, oh, I can't eat whatever I want anymore, I'm 30. It's actually flipped. So Michael Rose, with his fruit fly research, flipped it. So it's not that your metabolism slows down when you're 30, it's that you're less adapted to the modern diet, right? So it's like, as you age, you are less adapted to eat processed foods. And some people are better adapted than others, and some people can last longer.
Isn't it gene expression? I think is what he talked about, is that like genetically as we age and you start getting in this splitting, like I think it's what is it, like genetic replication, cell replication, after a certain amount of points, like your body doesn't have the ability to fight, and genetically you have to return to your ancestral diet, I think is, and I could be fucking that whole thing.
It's a little bit like that. Yeah, I don't remember all the details, but it's, you have to go back to your ancestral diet, and that's what they found with the fruit flies, and they gave them different versions. They had the ancestral, they used like apples, and they used like different, like
jam. The original fruit flies, they got in like a back of like some orchard in like Maine, and they brought them and they fed them, you know, they'd had hundreds of generations eating apples, and then the next ones they brought them on, and like I think they did like was it bananas, and then they brought them on, and it was pretty wild to see that, like, and then I think they bred them in generations, and because they only lived 7 days, so they were able to accelerate it.
So they could look at tons of generations really quickly. And I think that's the ultimate thing, is you need to go as soon as possible, go back to your most ancestral diet. And that's actually, have you heard of Paleo Medicina in they're in Europe somewhere? They go back to the ultimate ancestral diet, which is just like bone marrow and fat and organ meats and meat and like kind of lower protein to cure cancers and to reverse like insane things. And In extreme cases, it's basically, let's go back to the diet that we were eating like 3 million years ago. And they have amazing results. So that I think there's really something to just going back to how the human body just like what it needs. And not everyone needs that, though, right?
The other one too, which I'm going to talk out of turn because I haven't, I just cracked it. But that book, Breath, where they talk about like the chain. And I actually got into this. There was a book called Deep Nutrition I read years ago where the gal went through and she used a bunch of Weston Price's pictures to show the difference between faces of like people that were raised in like a evolutionary kind of like a hunter-gatherer diet versus today. And they talked about like the narrowing of the face. If you look up True Nutrition, Charles.
Deep Nutrition, yeah, Dr.
Deep,
Kate.
Deep Nutrition.
You said Deep Nutrition the first time. Yeah,
and then I said True Nutrition, but it's Deep Nutrition. But she showed all the Weston Price. The one thing that's fascinating is when they looked at these like you know, individuals, the amount of chewing that they did because the food was unprocessed was like could be anywhere from like 4 to 9 hours a day of like being able to chew through roots or like this or even be able to chew meat that hadn't been cooked. So the idea is that because of the chewing, the jaw develops and then the nose, because obviously as you're chewing, you can't breathe through your mouth. So they talk about like the nasal passages and like, it's pretty fascinating to think like evolutionary. Yeah. I mean, the food is one thing, but actually how the food was consumed and how it was processed is another key component that people tend to gloss over.
Well, Dr. Kate is another person in the film.
Is she in the film?
She's in the film.
Dude, I must've read her book, 12 to 14 years ago. And in my original, when we would go teach CrossFit football, the original nutrition talk was based off of her book, Deep Nutrition, because it was so impactful.
Well, she was the nutritionist for the Lakers. So around, I don't know if it was 15 years ago, she kind of got
the, when they were good.
Tex, remind me, because we're going to reach out to her. We got to get her. She'd be great to get on the podcast. Great. And we have a hookup here. But I mean, I read her book so long ago. And then she got into the, not to cut you off, but the whole deal with the Fibonacci sequence for the faces, where they talked about, and I've used this talk within like symmetry and
Tom
beauty.
Tom Cruise.
Yeah. Did his face match on the Fibonacci sequence?
Where do you think they got it, John?
All those actors. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So we were getting.
Yeah, it was him and Cameron Diaz were the.
The perfection of the face. But what they found was that they did the same overlay, and it was actually a plastic surgeon that figured out the Marquez mask was he could lay the digital mask on a face and see where you were deficient within the Fibonacci sequence. And that's what we understand symmetry and beauty. But the one thing that was wild was she laid the Marquez mask on all the old pictures of Weston Price that he took because he was obsessed with the tooth decay. So he took pictures of the faces. All of a sudden they were like lining them up and they all fit perfect. And that was like the fucking bomb in her book. And I was like, oh fuck. Like this is,
it's, she's amazing. My friends got pregnant and I immediately bought them her book. That's like my go-to book to buy for pregnant women. So the Weston Price stuff is also super interesting. And we go into a whole Weston Price section.
He was amazing. The people that have since taken over his research and like the Weston Price Foundation are kind of insane.
They're built loony.
Yeah.
But they have some stuff right. And I have a theory about them because they're so right about the nutrition stuff. They think that they're like, that there's this, you know, they're ahead of the game on everything. And they're like, oh, COVID's caused by 5G. I'm like, no, it's not.
Yeah.
They get a little wacky. But Weston Price was an amazing dentist. He went around the world about 100 years ago and he went to all these populations. I'm trying to kind of recreate some of that, right? Mm-hmm. That's why I go to Africa. I've been to Costa Rica. That's more in the blue zones. But he went around the world to find these people who still had amazing health and they had amazing teeth, and teeth are good.
Well, his son died of tooth decay. And so he became obsessed with this idea of like, why does tooth decay exist? So he went out and he found the hunter-gatherer tribes to try to figure out like why tooth decay didn't exist in them. And then he figured out that they didn't have like any of our modern problems and they were all fitter and bigger. And it was like, even to the point where the one that was most impactful for me was they had two twins. One was raised in the city and the other one was raised, and they showed them like physically side by side, and the difference in face in terms of like the bridge of the nose and the jaw and just the physical structure was like fucking two different people.
Well, that's okay. So what his big thesis was, this is, goes back to the very beginning. We talked about know the enemy and what are these things that are attacking us. And he said sugar, flour, and oil. It's basically refined grains, the added sugar, and the the seed oils, the cooking oils, industrial oils. So what you're talking about is everywhere he went, if they were isolated and they didn't have trade yet, they didn't have those three ingredients that came in, they were fine. And then, yes, what you're talking about is a younger brother. I remember this. I talk about this exact thing a lot, where they were in this, they were raised differently. They had, so they started eating the breads and the jam. And he called them the diseases of civilization. Mm-hmm. And he also caused them the displacement foods. So this is one of our big theories of, and it gets into like what is food and what we're talking about. It's all coming together now, is that these foods, the sugar, the flour, the oil, some people can debate whether they're uniquely toxic. Like, I don't think sugar is uniquely toxic. We need glucose. Like, we need carb. You know what I mean? There's certain things are oil. You know, there's this big debate about seed oil. Like, how bad is it? And, you know, Dr. Kate's actually very against it. And she goes into a lot of the science of why it's bad and how it gets in your cells. And it's polyunsaturated. You don't want these, mm-hmm. like, unstable bonds. And there's a lot of science to it. And I do like that. But you can also look at it simply as the displacement foods. Right, if you're getting a whole bunch of sugar, flour, and oil in your diet, that is displacing protein and nutrients. So we're talking, what is food? Food is just protein and nutrients, and then there's kind of energy, right? Energy is fat or carbs. If you think about it that simply, your body just wants protein and nutrients. And like you're saying, all these bodybuilders already always know this. So it's like, how do you lose weight? How do you get cut? Get all the protein nutrients your body needs and get rid of the energy.
Well, if you look at the Krebs cycle, so if you guys Google Krebs cycle, you'll see that the two sources for the Krebs cycle are fat and carbohydrates. You can obviously, gluconeogenesis can convert protein, and you can start, you know, using ketones to hack in and, you know, use those within an energy source. But if you look at like the Krebs cycle, I mean, it's carbohydrates and fat are your energy sources, like you said. And like really protein is the greatest determining factor. I mean, when we start talking about like changes within body composition, mm-hmm. and this is where everybody gets wrapped around the axle on like this macronutrient balancing deal. I'm like, at the end of the day, like you can balance, you know, carbs and fat based upon taste. Like the non-negotiables is always going to be protein mm-hmm. and the amount of calories that you're consuming in a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very hard to, you know, like if you want to be shredded, like you got to eat a high protein diet, it's muscle sparing. And it fits within it, and you're going to have to do it in some form of caloric restriction. If you want to get big and jacked, you're going to have to eat a high-protein diet with more calories than you're burning. I mean, and it involves lifting weights and some mm-hmm. form of protein synthesis. Like we had a podcast yesterday talking about the bulking, and I'm like, yeah, don't bulk if you're not fucking banging heavy weights every couple of days or at least 4 or 5 days a week. The worst thing you can do is like, I haven't trained in a month, but I'm on this bulking protocol.
Yeah.
Because regardless of how great the food was, and this was also a contention I had with Rob early on in the paleo deal, where there was this kind of misconception that you could eat as much as you wanted on the paleo diet mm. and never get fat. Mm. And I remember being like, wow. Well, then we showed up to a couple events and I was like, there's a bunch of fat paleo people. And I remember Rob's comment. He's like, yeah, because they eat like starved hogs. And regardless of like whatever, you can key somebody the most amazing diet on the planet. And if you overconsume those calories and you don't burn enough or exercise, you're going to be fat. Mm-hmm. Like there's no way to hack into that, you know, part of our genetic code. There's no magic foods.
Yeah. Yeah. The best thing you can do is get an edge with whole foods. Like whole foods, like paleo is just about whole foods, yeah, right?
But real so foods.
You can definitely get an edge. And he's kind of talking about satiety too. I like to talk about that because if you're eating a lot of protein and whole foods, then you should be naturally full.
You should be.
Right. Yeah. So I'm not saying everyone. Yeah. There are fat people out there doing this.
Yeah. No, I mean,
you can overeat whole foods,
you know, which is also, what was it? FTO gene. You know, we did some genetic testing. We figured out that actually Luke had the FTO gene, which was crazy because he could eat more food than anybody I've ever seen.
Well, you got to explain what that gene is.
So there's a gene that your body, like, so we had a, what was it? Fitness genes.
Yes. I actually went back to look at my results and that was the first one I sought out.
Okay. So the FTO gene, which they figured out was, has to deal with your body's internal regulation of food. Mm-hmm. So if you have this gene, your body no longer regulates how much you can eat. Ben Taylor, complete FTO gene, can fucking eat like a bottomless pit to the point where like he has to like plan his food out. Cause he's like, dude, if I just eat till I'm full, it's like a bottomless pit. Luke with same thing. We would go to these eating challenges. Mm-hmm. Like we went to El Tapiac that had like an 8-pound burrito. Luke fucking smashed that thing and then smashed my burrito. I am worst fucking big eater. Like I ate like a quarter and they were talking shit to me and I'm like, I'm going to puke. And Luke's over there just housing everything. You can eat those. You can eat those. I'm like, God damn, this guy's an endless fit.
Well, that's too bad for some people that have that. But that processed foods is usually what makes people overeat. So yeah.
Well, it's the magical balance. Rob, I remember Rob in one of his talks made a great point where he's like, the magical balance of like overconsumption is the mixing of sugar and fat.
Yep.
Like he's like, think of a donut.
Yep.
He's like, when you take sugar and fat and you deep fry it in oil, he's like, you basically have created like the paradox of like obesity. And then the problem is like your body eats that, hits every serotonin response, and like you want to consume everyone.
And here's another side to it. Not only is that completely true, and that's what all processed foods are, these hyper palatable combinations of those. It's also the Western price. What's a donut? It's sugar, flour, and oil. Yeah. That's all it is. But also, it's that your body isn't getting any protein and nutrients. So a donut has zero protein and nutrients, basically. It's just pure energy and sugar and flavor. So if your body doesn't get that protein, your body wants to get protein and nutrients. That's all it wants. And if you give it foods that don't have that, it's going to keep eating until it tries to get the protein nutrients. This is kind of the protein leverage hypothesis that I think is super interesting. Is they've shown this in all different animal species, that all animals would eat to get a certain amount of protein, right? And so if you change out their food, you can do a study with a rat, right? And you get rats need 12% protein, right? So they have rat chow, 12% protein, whatever, carbs, fat, doesn't matter. They're fine. Then they can lower 10% protein. They give them like the same pellets, but it's 10% protein. They will overeat the exact amount to get that same amount of protein that they wanted, and they'll get fatter because they had to eat more calories to get there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So that is huge. And that's why it's so bad that the protein has been going down in the population. You can actually look at all the population in the last, since 1980, there's been a huge uptick in obesity.
Mm-hmm.
That's when the dietary guidelines were introduced, and that's when the population started lowering their protein. It's actually gone down a couple percent since then. Mm-hmm. And that actually, if you do the math, it's like how fat is the population. It's kind of the same amount as predicted by how the protein is lowered.
Wow.
Yeah. And so your body just needs that. It's so simple. Your body just wants protein and nutrients. I always include nutrients in there. That's what I was trying to bring up earlier, is that sometimes the bodybuilding crowd misses that.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think there's more to health than body composition.
Sure.
It's kind of obvious. There's your immune health, and there's like, all, you know, we're talking about metabolic flexibility and all this type of stuff. So I always include nutrients in there, and we do that in the film too, where it's not just protein leverage, it should be nutrient leverage. And your body is looking for protein and nutrients. And if you don't give it food with adequate protein nutrients, it's going to eat more food. Right. So that's also what I'm saying about paleo. It's like, it's a good thing if you're eating whole foods. You have an advantage. We're talking about the satiety advantage, but you also have the protein and nutrients. Protein and nutrients are kind of tied into satiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, why can you eat an entire bag of chips and not get full? Because it doesn't have the protein and nutrients. It's not filling you up properly. And the opposite is, whole foods usually have the right amount of protein and nutrients compared to their energy.
I thought it was the crunchiness and the salt.
But it's all, it's a push pull.
I thought it was a margaritas.
God damn it. I'll tell you, for me personally, I like the crunch of chips.
Mm-hmm.
Like the salt and the crunch, for some reason, like that's like, and I think it might be actually like the crunchiness, whereas like you eat them and you're like, ah, like if the chips come, it's like picking a belly button. It's like, don't, like, I just don't even have them. I'm like, just take them, because I'm going to eat the whole basket and I'm not going to be mad about it. The one thing though that, I always say to people too, like, you know, like, if you eat enough, like, that's another thing. And this kind of plays into it. And I've mm-hmm. noticed this, if like you go out to a steakhouse and you eat a big steak,
mm-hmm.
The amount of people that order dessert is probably zero. Mm-hmm. And I know we do this all the time. Like mm-hmm. we went out to a steakhouse and we were at Papa's Bros in Houston and we had a badass steak. And like the lady like was like, you guys want dessert? And everybody's like, no dessert. But I mean, how many times, if you don't eat enough, you're like, oh yeah, I got room for dessert, because you need enough steak.
If you had a pot, yeah, if you go out for like pasta or something and there's like a tiny little bit of meat, then yeah, you're gonna be either hungry an hour later or right then and there.
Well, continue with know your enemy. You introduced three, but there was a fourth.
Okay, yeah. Well, we're in wrap-up mode here. The Weston Price figured out a lot, and a lot of the modern science is proving it out, right? It's actually proving all the stuff that he talked about. And it's, I think the sugar, flour, oil, that's the main enemy. The funny thing, we started off by talking about how the world thinks the enemy is red meat. I mean, it's not funny. It's sad. But it's like too.
Yeah, but like, and I know we've danced around it, but like when did this narrative change? And more importantly, like, you know, cui bono, like who benefits from this? Because like if you think about it, like who benefits from a sick and weak population? Like, I don't think anybody does.
I don't think people want super sick populations. They want what you're talking about is docile populations, something that they can just control. I think there's always been a power dynamic that's like the pharaohs and the peasants of the ancient Egypt. That same thing of just like the power at the very top and everyone else. And I think that's still going on today. We just don't know it. It's kind of happening at a world level that people just don't really realize it's going on the world level. Now, like Klaus Schwab's around, you know, looking like the evil scientist from Austin Powers.
Dr. Evil.
Dr.
Well,
Evil.
The other one is whenever they show those dudes, they're always wearing these robes. They wear these robes that remind me of like, did you ever see Star Trek, The Search for Khan? Like they're all dressed up.
Is that the fourth one?
Dude, that was like the best one was when Ricardo Montalban is playing Khan. And I love Ricardo Montalban. Huge fucking Fantasy Island fan when I was a kid. But they're wearing these like outfits, like they're Klingons or like fucking like it's like crazy. Like it's straight up like whenever you see those like Bohemian Grove or any of these like wacky space culture. That's what these fucking guys are wearing. I'm like... first of all, who designs these outfits? It's like the superheroes. I always want to know, like, do they have like a superhero costume designer that comes up with this crazy shit? Where the fuck does Klaus Schwab get this outfit?
I think he thinks he's a superhero.
Pull this up, Charles.
Klaus Schwab. Yeah, it's like the gray thing with like the weird collar.
Oh yeah,
like
it's straight up like you know, like the aliens come and he's in charge of like the intergalactic planetary.
There he is. Oh, the first one. And the second one.
Dude, look at the crazy outfit with this like. Like, oh my God. And they got this, like, it's all this weird fucking Masonic, like, Templar.
Look at the second one, too.
Hey, Tex, you're a Templar.
Look at that.
Like a Freemason, aren't you? All the Freemason imagery, right?
Yeah. What's the other one?
Well, you got the Templars and then you got the Freemasons.
I'm the third one that you wouldn't understand.
Okay. Yeah. I'm not in any secret societies. As you guys know, I'm not in a secret society. So I'm a little.
I think he thinks he's a superhero. I think these guys, they're like kind of megalomaniacs where they think.
Kinda?
Well, they think that they have, I don't know, if most of them are rich and they just think that they have more knowledge and power and they deserve to rule the world, basically.
Do you feel like, and I know this is maybe a bridge too far, but like whenever I hear any of their talk on ideology, it sounds a lot like the Nazis repackaged. And I always wonder, I'm like, is this just like the repackaging of the Fourth Reich? Because it sounds a lot like the Aryan Nazi Hitler's kind of master plan stuff. Like whenever I listen to it, I'm like.
And he's German too.
Yeah. No, I mean, this sounds like. And then what's amazing is then all of a sudden when you connect all like the people from not only our government and all the other governments that are on board with these guys. And what's wild is I'm like. When I hear the message, it sounds batshit crazy, but I'm like, what are they telling these guys?
I know nothing of this. The Great Reset?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Oh, he wrote a book. This is the best part. He wrote a book called The Great Reset that was going to come on, that was going to be started by, I want to say, a pandemic. And the book was released in May, and like we had lockdown in April. Like it was the weirdest thing. But yeah, The Great Reset, the pandemic. I mean, these guys have been like at the forefront. And the problem is, you know, you get people like, oh, it's conspiracy theory. And I'm like, no. They have videos where these guys are talking about this, that we're going to usher in this great reset using the pandemic for it.
Yeah.
I mean, and then like they had like Biden the other day, the second pandemic is coming. We need your money for it. Like it's telegraphing. I mean, they've gotten to the point where it's so brazen. They're not even hiding this stuff anymore. And I think for like the average American, like me or like you guys, you know, we want to raise our kids. We want our kids to go to a school where, you know, they don't come home and I have to like spend 3 hours trying to deprogram them from all the nonsense. We want to be able to, you know, see our kids grow up. Like I want to be able to go to the store and like, you know, be able to buy the foods I want without some weird fucking tax. I want to be able to go lift some weights and live my life unabated. And I think hopefully the majority of people fit within that. Life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, right?
Well, they're making it hard. I think most people just buy into it. And they do a good job of discrediting people and making them seem like conspiracy theorists when we're just like saying they are telling us what they're doing. And yeah, there are reports. There's like a 2010 document that talks about this, the whole pandemic, and how they're going to roll out all this stuff. And it's like this, they can do stuff out in the open and this planning. And then most people, when you talk to them about it, I go home to Hawaii, everyone's brainwashed there. And they just think you're a lunatic. You're like, are you like Alex Jones? Like, what are you talking about? I'm like, can't you see?
As crazy as Alex Jones is, like his track record. I mean, he was obviously wrong. I mean, he got basically sued out of oblivion on that Sandy Hook deal. But like, I mean, for the most part, like a bunch of stuff he said's come true, which actually scares the shit out of me because Alex Jones is a fucking madman. I was always kind of peripherally, and then he was on that Joe Rogan podcast for like 3 hours, and I was driving and listened to it, and I was like, first of all, this dude's ability to like jump from different conspiracy theories and tie them together, I've never seen anything like it. His fucking comprehension of this stuff is insane.
But he's like does a good job at basically discrediting everyone else that believes and that like knows what's really going on. You know what I mean? Because he mixes in 80% stuff that's real and then 20% nonsense. And now everyone's just like, everything's nonsense.
I got this from Greg Glassman. So when I was on Jeff Gonzalez's podcast, he asked me a little bit, and I was like, you know, in terms of like somebody who legitimately has changed the world for whatever reason, whether you hate him or you love him, Greg Glassman effectively did it. He did more to put barbells in strength training and get people into strength training weights and put barbells in people's hands than anybody other human being, other than maybe like, you know, who was the original dude, like in the back of the magazines, Arthur Jones, right? With Nautilus, like, you know, like the deal where like the bully kicks the sand in the face and you got to lift some weights and he gets big. I mean, like CrossFit has done more in terms of like functional fitness, training, barbells, garage gyms, Rogue. I mean, whatever you want to say, like that input and his contribution is undeniable, right? Like regardless how you feel about him. So like you think about like changing the world. And I remember Greg made a great point to me once. He's like, he said, I have a problem in that I approach everything as bullshit. I think everything's bullshit. And then I have to effectively walk everything back to try to prove it to myself, opposed to most of the world that just believes everything and waits to be proved wrong. I go at the exact opposite. Everything's bullshit. And it's kind of like scientific, right? Like if you have a hypothesis, great. I'm going to put it out there. You're going to put it out to the scientific community because they're going to kick holes in it. And we're going to see whether or not it's true. Opposed from, well, let's just believe everything and hope to God that it's right. And if it's wrong, we'll prove it right. I mean, and it made a ton of sense with strength training and everything that if you kind of approached everything like, it kind of sounds like bullshit. And then you do research and you walk everything back. It's probably a better way to approach it. And you think about for, you know, just about everything, you know, when you hear something, you're like, oh, I'm not going to buy in on this. And then you kind of do some, you know, forensics, a little bit of research. You talk to some people and then you kind of walk things back and you try to figure out what makes sense. And I think that is how most people should approach it. But unfortunately, most people are just so willing to fucking die into this stuff and to jump off the, you know, so well, I'll just do whatever they say.
That's why I made the Great Reset Resistance shirt.
Nice. That's perfect. You see it? Yeah, you're...
The Great Reset Resistance.
Well, you're using the fist. I think there will always be... I mean, so I'll just tell you this. Every great movie has always been about like a certain group of individuals being defiant against the fucking mothership. And it's like, it's everything from like Star Trek to fucking Red Dawn. Like it's always about a small group of people. Dune, same thing.
Hunger Games.
Top Gun.
Mission Impossible.
Mission Impossible.
Rogue Nation.
Like all those favorite movies you like with Angel Has Fallen, Bullshit Has Fallen, Everything Has Fallen.
Anything Gerard Butler's in, he rages against. Which, dude, you posted Den of Thieves?
Oh, yeah.
I love
that's one of our favorites.
Den of Thieves.
Well, look at the movie 300, right? Mm-hmm. Small group of 300 Spartans against an army of millions. You know, I mean, like every fucking story in Hollywood, everything that we've ever, you know, read into through history, this, the, you know, the stories of like
United States of America versus the UK.
Yeah.
Taste it.
Yeah. I mean, dude, it's always been this way. And yet, like, this is what's defined humanity. And yet people are so fucking quick to like, you know, like, I'll tell you this. I remember in college when we were studying like some of the hot, like I had a rhetoric class on, it was rhetoric of like, or of public speech. And we came in And the teacher turned on a TV and was actually one of Hitler's speeches in German. Nobody spoke German. But like you could see the passion and the fever, like just the fucking the charismatic nature in which he spoke was like, holy shit, dude. And to see how fucking like whipped into frenzy people were. And like all of a sudden you start getting an idea, because there's always like this idea of like, how the fuck could somebody pull this thing off? And at least in my mind, I always thought, how could somebody pull this thing off? And when the pandemic hit and this whole thing was going on, I'm like, oh shit, this is how people could pull this shit off. Because there's this idea of like, well, you know, we have to protect everybody. These are the bad guys. You know, we're doing this for you. I mean, it's the same fucking bullshit.
Fear. Yeah. Fear is a big motivator. Why? Like, if you look at the United States history and all the different rights and stuff that have been taken away, it's always over fear. They always are like, oh, the terrorists, and we're going to do this, and here's a Patriot Act.
The single greatest assault on America and our freedoms was the Patriot Act. And we fucking voted it in. And what's wild is when it came up, we fucking let them do it. And it's allowed them to do like all of this shit. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a reason you can't take a phone out of an iPhone. I mean, a battery out of an iPhone. Mm-hmm. So no, it's a scary deal, man. But unfortunately, we have the ability to, and I hate the term red pill people, but like we have the ability to be able to put a spotlight through, you know, our podcast and strength conditioning and performance through Power Athlete Radio on what's going on. And while I will never say we're right, I think what it does is it starts a conversation on people to do their own research. And when I say research, I don't mean just watching fucking YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. Call and reach out to experts, read books. You know, I mean, there's some really amazing podcasts on people doing some really just really killer shit. And I think, you know, it's a journey of self-discovery where you as an individual have to decide what your level of involvement is. If you're totally okay just like being disconnected from your food and the order eats and I don't give a fuck what I want and this, and, I mean, you're probably not listening to this podcast and you're probably not following a Power Athlete training program. But if you're like interested in where your food is and you're, you know, concerned on being able to like, you know, like, I think this stuff became more important to me once I had kids, when I realized I'm not always going to be here and what legacy am I leaving them? And I think like, you know, the idea as a parent of like you raise your kids and you want them to have the same opportunities. When you see this shit happening, you think, fuck man, like the only thing I can do is raise conscientious objectors or people that'll at least question the paradigm that they're being presented. And that's something I talk to my kids all the time about. Whenever somebody asks, you know, tells you something, I always want you to ask why. I want you to like, you know, do a deep dive. I'm not necessarily approach everything as bullshit, but you have to be a little suspicious of everything you're told, at least for your own sanity and your own sake.
The idiot box. I don't believe the idiot box.
My dad. I mean, dude, my dad called it the idiot box. He's like the nonsense coming out of the idiot's box is lying to you. And I laugh at this because I don't even think like I'm so sad. Like he passed away a couple years ago before all this went. But I don't think that he even understood the impact of social media and this. Like, even when we did the podcast, he was like, so wait a minute, this is going to live forever. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, your grandkids are going to be able to listen to this, your great-grandkids. And so I think like that everlasting. But, you know, and the other problem too is when the bad people come, they're going to know where to find us because we're talking about it on the podcast. So. And come get us, we're in Austin.
It's all good. Got the compound. Yeah. We each have our own compound now.
Well, I'm excited to see your place, man. I'm really excited to go to some of these boutique-y dinners. Yeah. Did you ever see that movie with Matthew Broderick, with Marlon Brando, where they had like the supper club? Do you remember what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. So like the whole deal was that they would take these endangered species and then they would like slaughter them and then have these like super high-end dinners. And there was a Komodo dragon in it. Do you remember this movie? It was Matthew Broderick.
The freshman.
So he gets a job in like working with like Marlon Brando, who's like the godfather. And like the whole thing was like they would have these supper clubs where these people would pay money to eat like endangered species. Mm. And not to say we're doing that, but I imagine a high-end supper club with really bitchin' meat where you get to show up and hang out with like-minded individuals and have some bitchin' foods.
That's what it is. Yeah. Nose to tail eating. We eat some weird stuff. Like we'll get some hearts, some smoked hearts and some like...
Dude, I got them. I love hearts.
Yeah.
I have hearts. I got a bunch of testicles, which are actually pretty good. You put them in the crock pot. Mm. I'm not into eating raw. I mean, like I'll eat raw liver, but I freeze it and I cut it into little cubes. There's an interesting thing with cooking. And actually Matt Lalonde told me this, that when you cook liver, because the iron content is so high, that the heat actually destroys the nutrients.
Mm-hmm. Right? It does.
So that's why. But in terms of like, you know, like eating raw testicles and all that,
I had a little a couple weeks ago for the first time, some raw testicles. It was okay.
It tastes a little bit better when you cook it.
Yeah.
In a crock pot with like a little bit of barbecue sauce or like a chili verde.
Yeah. So stick to liver heart. It didn't taste like much at all. I think I just kind of swallowed it. It was just like this gummy little thing. And I'm just like, all right.
Don't worry, Charles. When we start our cooking show, we'll cook testicles.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll pan fry them up. I got a great recipe for fucking stir fried testicles. Mm-hmm. So, well, dude, thanks for coming on Power Athlete Radio, man. It's always great to have you here and connect and fucking go down the deep dive in terms of what you're doing with food and the exploration and just trying to get the message out. And people want to get a hold of you, or people are more interested and they're digging on this series that's coming up. How do they get a hold of you? Where do they find it? And more importantly, how do they digest it?
Oh, man. Food Lies. Yeah. Just search for Food Lies on any platform. I'm there. Instagram is where I'm at mostly. YouTube, I got some content on the Food Lies YouTube channel. We're actually going to put out the intro to the film, well, to the series. It's good. People are excited about it. We handmade this intro. It took us a year to make this intro. We spent 3 full months filming, and it's going to be good. So just check out Food Lies.
Yeah, no, Brian's got a great Instagram page. I actually started following Brian before we ever became friends and was really digging on the fight that, and more importantly, his ability to get in there and just fucking duke it out with these people, which I think after a while, you're like, God, I can't fight these people anymore. And he picked it up and starts fucking battling. I love it. So I try to jump in there and help a little bit, but.
Oh, man. Social media is a crazy place, but yeah.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. Well, thanks for tuning in. Have another episode of Power Athlete Radio. See you.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. To follow Brian Sanders, you can find him on Instagram at food.lies. And there you can get information on how to contribute to his docuseries, Food Lies. Until next time, bye.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.